Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep your love, I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne,
a lyrical analysis of Kanye West.
My name is Chris Lambert.
My name is Travis Bean, and shit, let's have a party, Chris. Let's drink some drinks.
Yeah, you want to crack a few open, tilt a few back?
Maybe some Jaeger bombs, remember those?
Yeah, do I? Jaeger bombs. I only had like two nights where I did Jaeger bombs because they ruined my existence.
Mm-hmm. They do for most people.
Yeah, it turns out Jägermeister and me do not get along. I was much more partial to Irish car bombs.
Oh man, I used to pound those as well. I gotta say, I feel like we should have done this episode drunk. Truly should have done it. We've done it before and it was fun.
It was fun, but like middle of the afternoon on a Tuesday when we're in different states. Not quite as
enjoyable.
We could
have waited till tonight.
Oh, we could, yeah. Do a late night recording.
Woo. We did a live Drunken Watching the Throne episode in Austin. Remember that?
Yeah, we had just finished doing... That was in the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah. No, was it really? Oh, God. I wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised.
Because I think we got back from doing our live show at South by Southwest, and we were just like, let's celebrate. And we got like drinks out and just started drinking and turned on the laptop to record. And
yep, this all sounds correct.
Yeah. But yeah, drinking would be appropriate. But, you know, we have a heavy mission ahead of us with this episode. Similar to who was the dude that was pushing the boulder up the hill?
God, what's that fucker's name?
Him. He who pushes boulders up hills only for it to endlessly roll back, and that's his eternal punishment. That's essentially Sisyphus. What we're having to do. Sisyphus. There we go. Maybe. We're like Sisyphus in the fact that getting people to love and appreciate drunken hot girls is like pushing a boulder up a mountain.
It's more of a gargantuan task than that, even though. We need a different metaphor.
It's like pushing a mountain up a mountain.
There we go.
Yeah. So that's what's ahead of us. And we need all of our wits about us.
Okay, right.
We might even need to restart the episode just to properly ground people in the fact that, hey, we are serious today.
I mean, I'm 100% serious. I've made it clear in this show before. Like, to me, drunken hot girl, I always hesitate saying stuff like this because I feel like sometimes people look at me and like just think I'm a joke for the things I like. which like in some sense I'm okay with owning because like sure I could be that guy, but at the same time like I'm dead serious when I say things like I love Showgirls, like I love that movie. I could sit there and explain to you why I think it's an incredible movie. But part of the reason I love it is because so many people hate it. Because a movie or a song or whatever doesn't get that level of hate without, I think, being misunderstood. Even if it's bad, like there are elements of it that probably aren't being understood or being twisted in some way that create that kind of hate. And sometimes the hate adds to the enjoyment of it because like, especially in the case of like Drunken Hot Girls, like people so apparently don't understand it and like how ironic it is and self-aware it is and condemning it is of the celebrity lifestyle. Like the more people don't get it, the more I kind of realize that it works. Like it's so earnest in what it's doing. It's so good at what it's doing that it's making you think it's doing something completely different. And that's incredible. And I got to say this song, because of that aura the song has, like it's getting to the point where I think it's maybe one of the best Kanye West songs.
Like it's in your top 10 at this point?
yeah, like if like lyrically, musically, like if I just take it on its own, probably not. But again, like it has a power because it is what it is.
Okay. Okay. And when did you first start having these feelings?
Well, you know, when we last time when we went through graduation and we were really starting to understand the narrative of the album and really starting to figure out what this middle section of the album is doing, which is Can't Tell Me Nothing, Barry Bonds, Drunken Hot Girls and Flashing Lights, and how they all kind of carry a similar energy and how dour they are and how scary they are. I just think from then on, like each successive day, I like Drunken Hot Girls more and more. Like because each successive day, it seems like more and more people don't like it. So like it just makes me want to like it more, and I feel like I just continue to understand it more.
I just picture like each day you wake up and you know that X-ray machine in the Grinch that shows his heart growing like sizes bigger. You just stand in front of it and see your love for Drunken Hot Girls increasing just a little bit more each day.
Absolutely. How do you feel, Chris?
You know, it was, I think, a similar tipping point, like time frame wise. I said on the last episode, and I've talked about before, that when I first tried getting into Kanye in 2007, having liked a lot of his singles, but hadn't listened to his albums at that point, I was in college, I downloaded them all. Start listening, and I started with Graduation, and I got to Drunken Hot Girls, and I was a little turned off by Barry Bonds already, and then I heard this song, it was just like, you know what, I just don't like the misogyny that's like felt dripping from this song, and kind of put Kanye to the side for a little bit until 808s and Heartbreak came out. So it took about a year for me to come back around in terms of listening to his music, and it still, I had the general opinion that it was his worst song until we went over it, which was what, 2017? Yeah, 2017. And it has grown over time, because as we figured out the narrative of Graduation and the purpose of what this song is doing on the album, like that idea of misogyny, even though it's still like present in terms of the character, it's more tolerable looking at it as this is a strike against the character, or this is to show us that the character has reached a place of like grossness, rather than it being Kanye just making a gross song because he thought it was a good idea. Which I'm sure there are other people being like, how do you know there's a narrative? It could just be Kanye making a gross song, in which case, yeah, I would be still a little bit more turned off from it. But now that I at least believe we have this character arc and it's part of the character journey, I dig it, because it becomes the nadir on the album in terms of how we're looking at this character and the corruption, going from being the bright-eyed, I'm going to take the world by storm guy in Good Morning and Champion, to what he's doing with his time and with his life on the song. Like, that's killer. And then the production just continues to grow on me.
Totally. Like that's my other thing about this. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Keep going.
Go.
Well, I was just going to say, like, yes, if you think the whole intercontextuality argument is bullshit, if you think Kanye couldn't possibly have a narrative on an album, because who would ever do that? Like, okay, that's fine. You can take this song in a vacuum. Even then, I kind of have trouble figuring out what people aren't seeing in the song. Like, unless you're reading it completely literally, just like on a page, and you're removing any sense of irony or there the possibility that there could be any self-awareness happening just like in that vacuum, like that seems crazy to me. Like at some point, like, he gets stuck with this drunk girl for the rest of his life. Like, the song doesn't go to good places. And then when you listen to it, like the sound of it, the production, like, it's so beautifully ugly. Like, it's so grimy and gross. Like, it kind of pulsates like Barry Bonds and Can't Tell Me Nothing do, but like it's the sound that's like lurking beneath the surface. Like, it's going to grab you around any corner. It makes the floor vibrate. Like, it's just got this undeniable sound, this bump that is seems so that to me it just sounds scary. Like, it fits so well with like so many songs of this album that are very clearly describing a situation that isn't great for Kanye. I don't know how you could listen to it and hear it and read the lyrics and not see that like nothing is being glorified here.
Yeah, the whole production, as like gorgeous as we're saying the production is, it's gorgeous in its ugliness, right?
Yes.
And the little, and that's one of the things that makes it kind of so appealing. Like, it makes me think of not Beach Bum. What's
the James Franco of Beach Bum though?
James Franco and
Spring Breakers. Yeah.
Like, there's something like ugly in the mise-en-scene of that movie that mixes kind of like the trashiness with the glory of the lifestyle that they're living.
I love this. Yes.
And that movie has this like power to it because of that mixture of how pretty it's filmed, but how ugly the things being filmed are.
Totally. Like, it makes it seem like this lifestyle that James Franco lives is really appealing and that you would like to be part of it. And these girls go down this rabbit hole to the point where at the end, you know, they take the guns and they kill everybody and they win. They escape this life that they're in. But you could view the whole ending as that not happening, that they're kind of stuck in it, or they die in that final scene, or that it's all just fantasy. Like, that's such a part of the movie. And you're right. Like, the more beautiful it is, the uglier everything gets and the scarier everything seems, and the more into fantasy we escape, and like the less real it all seems.
Some door-to-door person just came by.
Cool. I love that people keep knocking on your door during the day.
It's infuriating. It's
bizarre.
And he sees me in the window, so.
Just show him the lyrics of Drunken Hot Girls. He's probably a Kanye fan, and he's probably a Watching the Throne fan, and he'll understand what's happening.
Right. Like, witness greatness. You know what's happening. Now get out of here. All right. I think he'll not knock again. But yeah, and a lot of that harrowing production, or the darkness of that production, comes from the sample that Kanye uses.
Ooh, mama.
Which is Sing Swan Song by Can, a German band. Just a drinking of dust. She's sucking up again, but happy as the day is long.
Krautrock.
Krautrock. 1972 was the release of this song, and you listen to it, and it's very eerie. It's very stop knocking at the door. It's very eerie, and it has this ghostly quality to it, which is actually really appropriate because in the middle of the song, well, here, I'll read the lyrics and see if it keys in for listeners out there. She can have, she like her birthday, soothe to sing swan song. She gave her cold hand to he who'd been just a drunken hot ghost. She's sucking up again, but happy as the day is long. And those are the lyrics. Like, the only lines in the song, what, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And they repeat 3 times through.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates just this repetition, this little bit of eeriness. The fact that you have this girl who has this cold hand she gave to a guy that is described as nothing more than a drunken hot ghost. I guess the song was pretty popular, especially with having such enigmatic lyrics. And the fact that Kanye was able to take a drunken hot ghost and flip it in a way to where it sounds like a drunken hot girl or these drunken hot girls is really well done. You might be wondering, like, what could we possibly take away from lyrics of Sing Swan Song? Yeah, and typically, you know, just zooming out, what you see on the song is that there's this girl who is choosing to be with a guy that was just a drunken hot ghost, which it comes off at least as someone that's superficial, alcohol problem, not somebody that maybe you want to have a relationship with. And this girl spends her time like sucking up to him, trying to be happy. And there are other ways that you can take this. Like maybe she is happy, right? Or maybe this is just a sad fate that she's having and that she could have a better life. Like there is this opportunity for her to have like her birthday, sing Swan Song, mm-hmm. but instead she gave her hand to this guy, in which case it would be the speaker of the song just kind of saying, you know, she could have a better relationship maybe with me, but she's with this like stupid ghost.
Yeah.
So her fate feels kind of like up in the air, right? And maybe she's not making the best decision.
Yes. And in that sense, it doesn't, you couldn't see anything changing. Like you wouldn't assign any sort of narrative to this song, but to me, the narrative really starts to form. You really start to see a flow when you bring in the production and you see how the guy's voice is being warped. The guy singing the song, Damo Suzuki, throughout, like his voice starts sounding very normal, and it's not surrounded by much instrumentation. It's very folksy and acoustic-y. But then as the song builds between the first and the second verse, like you see more and more instruments being introduced. And it becomes much more of a studio production. And then in the second verse, there's like this celestial atmosphere. And Suzuki's voice has this echo. And it really does start like to feel like a ghost has taken over. And then the song starts to like hover with that energy. And it like becomes more and more chaotic. And by the third verse, like the music takes over. And Suzuki's voice is really, it's like buried behind this wall of ambient sounds of electronic flourishes. Like, all that stuff really takes over the song, and he really starts to fade away. It starts to sound like these ghostly sounds take over, and he himself starts to sound like this ghost who's kind of just fading. So, yeah, the lyrics repeat themselves, but everything around those lyrics, you know, these sonic flourishes, like it helps the story develop, and it adds all this emotion sonically. Like you start to feel how separated, either how separated the singer is from this woman, or just how more distant this woman's growing in general, if it's not a man singing about a woman. And it, like, the person singing like starts to disappear into the ether almost, and you can just sense that either he's losing her or we're losing her, and maybe there's some hope that she'll come back around, but I mean, production wise the song signals that that's not happening, that like she is slowly fading away and she'll be gone by the end.
Yeah, where that hauntingness comes in, right? Especially the amount of space the production starts to take up. Like between the first and second iteration, you don't have that much distance in terms of music. Mm-hmm. It's just like the last line hits, you have a little bit of a little span of music, and then the lyrics pick up again. But between the second and third, it's this really long portion of just instrumentals. until the verse comes in again, and then a longer outro that really starts to give that sense of isolation you're talking about.
Totally, yeah. It's like this quiet chaos is building.
Yeah, and how this would apply to Drunken Hot Girls specifically is more to do with Kanye being the person that has the choice here and picking the drunken hot ghost. So even though on the original sample, it's a she gave her cold hand to a he, in this case, it would be Kanye that's giving his cold hand to this drunken hot ghost. And that lines up with what we've talked about in terms of the whole album being an interpolation of Common's I Used to Love Her, where Common talks about this sort of girl that he grew up with and how she was awesome. Everyone loved her. She was full of potential. Then she goes out to Los Angeles and gets woke and starts to change and then transcends beyond woke to just exploited and commercialized. And she's no longer the amazing person that everybody thought she was, but just kind of used up. Mm-hmm. It's not a pretty picture. And Common reveals that he's talking about hip hop. And essentially just the story of hip hop from being something that was very much for the people to something that was very much a product and commodified and becoming more hollow as it grew in terms of popularity and as a business. And Kanye flips that idea with him being hip hop and Chicago being the one that's seeing Kanye like have all this potential, go out into the world and have some kind of success, but end up being corrupted and no longer being the person that Chicago knew and had such fond feelings of. So that structures the album. And you would see the similar thing going on here to where just Kanye's taking the character in the song and flipping it a little bit to where he's the one being critiqued. This album feels very much, maybe more so than any of the other ones, as Kanye critiquing himself and his actions in a much more specific way, rather than necessarily blaming society or right. circumstances for the state of things.
I mean, yeah, like that last thing you said, I feel like that's part of why this song has the reputation it does. And it's viewed as very ugly and simplistic, but it needs to be as ugly as and as simplistic as possible for it to work. Like, it truly does need to represent somebody who's lost, who has grown so far away from not only the person he was on College Dropout and Late Registration, but like what he represented and what his song sounded like. Like, Drunken Hot Girls is just in the complete opposite direction in every possible way. It needs to be ugly and gross and single-minded and narcissistic. Like, it's all of those things so much. And yeah, it's part of this like overall narrative of Graduation, where Kanye's, you know, he's lost connection with this woman he broke with, I Wonder, and this woman comes to represent Chicago, and how he just, that's not him anymore. Like, he's slowly losing that. And he thinks by the end of the album that he'll be able to put all of these, you know, bad days that he had on Can't Tell Me Nothing and Barry Bonds and Drunken Hot Girls, he can put that all in the past eventually. He can come back to Chicago after he's grown through that. But as we realize by the end of the album, like, because of the way he acts on this song, it's damning. There's no way to turn around after that. Like, he fucks everything up because of how gross he is in this song. So the grosser he is, the better the song is. Fuck you, everybody who hates.
Yeah, because that's the thing, right? Like, I think a lot of people that hate this song because they just view it as like unmitigated misogyny or just grossness may not have the perspective that there is a comeuppance, mm-hmm. right, on Homecoming. And there is that self-awareness on Big Brother that Kanye is realizing that his attitude has caused a lot of issues. So there are ways in which he becomes self-aware of how gross he was, and maybe even like is showing that remorse and atonement, especially if you subscribe to the view that each album kind of builds off the previous ones, than just looking at where he's at on 808s and Heartbreak. My goodness. but yeah, very much a necessary stepping stone to setting up the loss that occurs on Homecoming.
Totally. Yeah.
Hmm. And then I just want to point out, I want to put this on record for anybody to debate, but a lot of the lyrics for Sing Swan Song have "she can have she like her birthday soothe to sing swan song," but I swear that Damo is saying choose. She can have she like her birthday choose to sing swan song.
That would make more sense. Like,
yeah, right? Like she has a choice in what she's doing, but maybe I'm wrong, you know? If we could get Damo on the on the show for just a few minutes to ask, or any of the other can people, then that would be lovely.
Yeah. We know you're listening, so all you got to do is reach out to us.
Yep. Yep. It's on you. It's on you. Well, so should we get into the lyrics of Drunken Hot Girls?
I've never been more excited to do anything in my entire life.
Bullshit just to mess with these drunken hot girls. She go through too much bullshit just to mess with these drunken hot girls. We go
slacking, I'm again too happy.
Oh, a quick shout out. A lot of this analysis is going to come from a piece posted on R. Kanye by Reader 313 3 years ago, where they make the brilliant connection that Drunken Hot Girls is actually a retelling of the escalating nuclear tensions between the US and USSR during the Cold War.
Mm-hmm. Which it clearly is.
Yeah. Like, case in point, the intro being Mos Def being like, la-di-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, blap. You can see Reader here says, Mos Def warns that this daydream can easily be interrupted by a nuclear strike symbolized by blap. This intro is setting up the theme of the rest of the song, that nuclear weapons are too unpredictable and that they shouldn't be handled by any government due to their destructive power. What a piece.
That's what I immediately thought of.
Of course, of course. It's just a really funny and like thorough write-up. This has to be like 500 words, like 750 words, and just goes verse by verse explaining like US and USSR Cold War like instances and rhetoric. So
yeah.
If you want to read that piece, I'll link to it on Twitter, or you can just Google Drunken Hot Girls R. Kanye.
You know, the sad thing is that a lot of people would compare that to exactly what we do on this show.
Absolutely. I know. I was thinking that. Like, I actually, when I saw the piece, I was, like, laughing, and I was like, wait, is there going to be something at the end that's like, listen to Watching the Throne? I could see it. I could see it. But that's what I would call a reach, right? Like, this would be a reach. I like one comment that somebody's like, that doesn't sound right, but I don't know enough to dispute it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. So it does start with Mos Def saying la-di-da-di-da-di-da, blap, which, you know, comes off, and now I'm going to sound like Reader 313. It's harmless at the beginning. You just kind of think like, oh, that's a weird way to start a song. Blap. But later, when we get to Kanye's final verse, I think it actually becomes much more relevant and ironic. So I guess we'll save it to when we get there, but don't overlook this intro.
It is another, more foreshadowing, it's another instance where a song is bookended by two repeating elements, because this closes the song as well.
Which, what, this makes three in a row that Kanye's done that?
He's made a habit of it on this album.
A lot of a sense of circularity, starting somewhere, going off to places, and then coming back to where you started.
A cycle almost. Oh, I wonder if that'll be an element of this song.
Huh. So we start with the hook. We go through too much bullshit just to mess with these drunken hot girls, which the "we" is not really clear at this point, right? I mean, you imagine Kanye being who he is and being a prominent musical artist in the hip hop space, that it probably refers to that. Like, people like me on this level doing this kind of work have gone through too much bullshit just to mess with these drunken hot girls, with the implication being like, there's nothing like meaningful to this. There's no like point to this. We put in all this effort. Like, what is the purpose? And then I think having Mos Def in this song really ties into like the sense of "we," right? Mm-hmm. It's one of the few songs on this album that has a guest feature or even has like somebody else present. And I think it's one of the necessary ones just to show that it's not just Kanye alone, but he and Mos.
Mm-hmm. It's also a very characterizing chorus because we think of this section of the album, you know, he breaks up for Chicago on I Wonder, and Good Life is describing all of these cities he's going to go to and like the world traveling he's going to do and how he's breaking free from this small environment that he had been constrained to his whole life. And then Can't Tell Me Nothing, as Connie says, like his first hood anthem, like he becomes part of this entity. And then Barry Bonds, like, it's the song feels like Lil Wayne anointing Kanye. Like, Lil Wayne even closes out the song, and it almost feels like him bringing Kanye into this world. So I do think that's an element here in the hook, that Kanye, this is him now. Like, he's not part of Chicago anymore. Like, this is his world. And the "we" is just like every dude in the club, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you could also kind of take it as, one, like, we shouldn't be doing this. Like, why do we mess with these drunken hot girls after all, like, the bullshit right. that we've gone through to get to where we are? But you could also view it as just, like, I'm too elevated to be messing, like, to have these drunken hot girls, like, mess with me mm-hmm. rather than just, like, make it easy for me.
Yeah.
Like, that seems to also be, like, a lot of the implication is Kanye wants it to be easier for him to indulge.
Yeah, right.
On site, lifestyle.
I mean, you bring up on site that we have an interesting connection there, right? Well, I guess we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. We'll get there. So that just kind of repeats multiple times, right? He says the first time, the second time, and then kind of breaks it down to the "we go through to" anyway.
Yeah.
Driving around town looking for the best spot for the drunken hot girls. Up in the club, look at here what we got, some drunken hot girls. Stop dancing with your girlfriend and come dance with me. Stop talking about your boyfriend since he is not me. Stop running up my tab cause these drinks is not free. You drunk and hot girl.
Then we get to the first verse with Kanye saying, driving around town looking for the best spot, which, again, not, it seemingly doesn't feel like that big of a deal, but when Kanye's framing the song with "we go through too much bullshit" and you start the song with like driving around town looking for the best spot, you already get this sense of like the hoops you're having to jump through just for the opportunity to get with one of these drunken hot girls and the time that's wasted and the effort put in. I think that's the thing to keep in mind as we're reading these lyrics, is that it ends up being like very self-aware of how dumb these guys are for like doing what they do. So it's like Kanye, the artist, is saying like, isn't this stupid? Even while the character on the album is like jumping through as many hoops as possible to try and just get this connection with these girls.
I mean, it's totally self-aware. On the Genius page, there's that quote from Kanye in the Rolling Stone article where he's basically, Kanye's describing, like, saying, like, this song represents me. Like, he's talking about drunken hot girls of all the songs, like, most represents me because, you know, when I was a kid, I would reach for the porno mag and, like, I would envision this life I could have where I would get these women and I'll just spend all my time chasing these women. So here in the song, and Kanye's saying that in the Rolling Stone article, thinking he's able to look back and realize, like, oh, that's dumb. So literally this behavior here he's describing right away is like what a kid would do. Like, he knows how ridiculous this is.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Him saying, like, a guy will get on a plane and go to the other side of the world to hit it for the first time and won't cross the street to hit it the second time. Wow. But as a man, your whole life is to provide for that girl in that white dress, that missing picture in your wedding photo. Mm.
You got to read the last part of the quote.
That was poetically put, if I do say so myself.
It's the most Kanye thing to say ever.
Yeah. Just like, didn't I do a good job putting that poetically? Yeah, that's the tension, right? And that's the tension that we see on the cover of The Life of Pablo, where you have the model girl in one spot of the cover and then the family on the wedding day in the other, the wedding party, and saying, which one, which one, which one? And Kanye's even bringing up that tension here, like, of just guys not looking to commit, being driven by sex, even though your whole goal is to try and get married and, like, connect with somebody, and looking at that tension and contrast.
Love.
Dangerous necessity. So yeah, driving around the town looking for the best spot for the drunken hot girls. Up in the club, look at here what we got, some drunken hot girls, which is funny, but also feels very predatory.
Yeah, it's strange.
And dehumanizing. But stop dancing with your girlfriend and come dance with me. What, like, just an escalation from, like, we're driving. All right, we're at the club. Now I see some girls and I'm just telling one of them, stop dancing with your girlfriend and come dance with me.
The escalation is key, though, because this is a classic Kanye thing to do. Builds and builds. You know, stop talking about your boyfriend since he is not me. He's, like, giving orders, and then stop running up my tab because these drinks is not free. All of a sudden, you know, the rug is ripped from beneath your feet and, like, you realize that there's consequences to living this. Like, you don't have as much power as you seem to exhibit. The girl kind of controls you, even though you're pretending that you control the girl.
Yeah, he comes off as the authority. But then with that last line, stop running up my tab, it's like, oh, she probably knows exactly what she's doing.
It also, again, doesn't glorify the life at all. Like, a song that glorifies this life is this verse ends with Kanye getting with this girl. But all it ends with is him losing money.
Yeah, right. And being concerned about something as, like, petty, like, in quotes, petty as that. Like, if he really was, like, the Barry Bonds superstar that he felt that he was and has said that he was, and, like, you know, I got money at the end of Can't Tell Me Nothing. But here he's concerned about, like, how much the tab is.
Yeah.
Just not quite like the baller status of things.
Not at all.
No, it reminds me of actually Kendrick's verse on No More Parties in LA, where for a lot of that, it's like Kendrick kind of like hitting on this girl and trying to tell her what's up. And at the end of the verse, she reveals that, like, she's been playing him the entire time. Mm-hmm. And starts lecturing him on the way things work. And you realize he got scammed. So kind of a similar energy going on here. Mm-hmm. But you have that first verse that kind of grounds us in the fact that Kanye is jumping through these hoops. So when we come back to the hook of we go through too much bullshit, you're having a better understanding of what it is he's referring to.
I don't wanna drop your friends off, I just want you. You drunky pucker. You wanna sit down, but we hit the drive-thru. You drunky pucker. Please don't fall asleep, baby, we almost back. Please don't throw
the car we almost crashed. Oh, now you sober, how'd I know you'd say that? You drunk and hot girl.
And then we come back to the verse, verse two. I don't want to drop your friends off, I just want you. So the scene has progressed from Kanye like arriving at the club, starting to talk to this girl, hearing her talk about her boyfriend and buying her drinks, to now dropping her and her friends off. He's now driving them home. And you want to sit down, but we hit the drive-thru. That's his like one victory, is that she wants to go to a restaurant and eat late at night. Like you can imagine like an IHOP or a Denny's, something like that. But Kanye wins here by just taking them to the drive-thru and buying all their food.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It feels like the moment in 9 Minute when he's like looking through the glass, looking at the condoms and shit, like trying to sound baller, but like secret, like this is his win, like doing this one little thing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, yeah, not a win at all. Please don't fall asleep, baby, we almost back. So now she's like passing out, which means like any like hope Kanye had for a hookup is quickly falling by the wayside. Then please don't throw up in the car, we almost crashed. Yeah, now the cost is even escalating in terms of like, not only did you waste time, you're gonna have to waste money and more time like cleaning up after the fact that she's throwing up. And then, oh, now you sober, how I'd know you say that, which always makes me think like it's in depth, it's not defined about where they are or what that situation is, but I always took away from that that it's kind of the idea that she just got home and now she's suddenly just like sober and okay and leaves him by himself.
Yeah. I mean, I guess more than anything, all I'm reading is just like how dumb all of this is. Like these are all the things he's concerned about. Like all of this is in an effort to sleep with the girl. Like he's dealing with so many stupid things that he knows are stupid in the moment and is commenting on how dumb they are. Yet we'll keep driving her to his place so he can get with her.
Yeah. Right. Just putting up with everything. Everything. And I guess, yeah, regardless of how you read the sober line, it's just telling the fact that it makes it feel like she was taking him for a bit more of a ride, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like suddenly the drunken hot girl is sober. Right. And how much of that was just her knowing what she was doing, like how taken advantage of was Kanye. Yeah, there's just a definite sense of him being behind in terms of the power dynamic.
It's also an interesting twist on thinking about like Gold Digger and how Kanye uses that song to show how living this kind of lifestyle or wanting to live this kind of lifestyle causes men and women to abuse each other. It's not just like women who are gold diggers or men who just like, you know, want, will leave their woman for a model. Like we see people hurting each other, but here it's like it removes an element of that even. To where this woman is just like, she's just drunk. Like her, she's just kind of living this like sad, trivial life, or maybe not even that, just kind of mundane in the way that she just goes to the club, gets drunk, and will go home with this guy. Like maybe no ill intentions, doesn't plan to strip him of any money. It's the guy who just, and the guy just wants to get with her. Like there's probably not even any larger aspirations than that. It's just kind of like, just sexual desire that he has. Like there's no tension to any of that like there is with Gold Digger, where like people can be hurt and people's lives can be upended. Like this is just describing like a really dumb, trivial scene where like these two people are going to get together and now they can't because the girl's too drunk. Like it's just so, it's, again, like it's just so mind-numbingly stupid that anyone would want to live like this.
And the fact that you have Kanye at the early parts of the album essentially saying, I'm going to go change the world, light up the Chicago skyline, like, I'm a champion, look what I'm going to do. And then this is what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like,
This is what he left the woman in Chicago for.
Yeah. And is this satisfying? Is this fulfilling? And we talk about this in the sense that it's not just what we said, but the fact that Kanye was looking to become a superstar, and maybe a bit more commentary on how silly that is in terms of like how much time you spend doing things for people that may not necessarily care about you. Yeah. And you're trying to win them over constantly, like with all these like performances, all these like public appearances. You're just doing whatever it is you need to do to try to gain public favor and to win with them, or sleep with them in quotes, in order to achieve your goals. And this kind of personifies that. It reminds me in some ways of that middle portion of The College Dropouts, where Get 'Em High, Slow Jams, New Workout Plan, and Breathe In, Breathe Out all kind of refer to Kanye making more mainstream pop music, where he's just kind of trying to cater to the masses rather than do the thing that he, or say the things that he needs to say as an artist. And it's that much more superficial period. Like, you can kind of read that as the same thing. He's wasting his time doing more of the superficial stuff to win people over that don't really care about him, that he'll never really have a relationship with.
Yeah, that's what I love about the sound of this album. We talked about it a little bit in this section of the album, but the stadium feel that Kanye's going for, the reliance on synthesizers, and this making his sounds like bump a little more so that like he could rock a stadium and put on a rock show. That sound is inherently associated with everything you're talking about, like wanting to impress people, wanting to be more than like what you think you are, and going about it in these like trivial ways. Not that making your music more catchy and bump a little more is trivial, but like the reason you want to do those things, to like gain adoration, to put yourself on a different level than you were, like it's kind of sad when you think about it in that way. And then I also think about the fact that Drunken Hot Girls was played during the first night of the Yeezus tour. I did some research, and as far as I could tell, he only did it on the opening night. But that is interesting to me that he played it during the falling section of the show, which is the third part of the show when he plays like Hold My Liquor, I'm In It, Guilt Trip, Heartless, Blood in the Leaves, all of these songs about loss and the consequences of living a certain lifestyle. Like, the sound of Drunken Hot Girls was brought into the sound of all of those songs that he played in the Yeezus tour. Like, again, the whole time in this middle section of the album, like you can sense that energy. Like, you can really sense that, yes, Kanye wants to reach more people, but reaching more people comes at a cost. And that sound, those synthesizers, that stadium feel, like that's all representative of that loss.
Definitely. And just to drive home a little bit more about why that Yeezus tour inclusion was meaningful, there were five acts in the tour, in the set, and it was Fighting, Rising, Falling, Searching, Finding. And that's essentially just like a narrative arc, right?
Yeah.
Like, you start with the character that's like fighting for things and then rising up in the world before crashing back down to earth and then searching for meaning and finding something more. So the fact that, as you said, it comes in the falling section, which would be kind of the downturn of things, and that Kanye associates this song with that sense of downturn and being in a bad place, just reinforces the fact that we should not be reading this in a like superficial, like straightforward, he's complaining that drunken hot girls aren't getting with him.
Love, a dangerous necessity that people seek without regard to where they are. The human heart is curious above all things. Love,
the lights are low, your eyes are bright, the music plays its sweet delight. It's out of sight, I'm feeling right, your dress is tight. Oh, wow, I want you right
now.
And that brings us to the bridge, where we have Mos Def, Yasiin Bey, saying, love the dangerous necessity that people seek, right? So kind of just grounding us in the fact that it love is this dangerous necessity, and people will do anything and everything they can to try to feel even a momentary sense of love, which kind of gets at what Kanye was talking about in his quote with Guys Will Fly Across the World for this first hits. But the a little bit of the tension that's there, and the fact that then they walk away from the second or won't do anything for the second. So there is this sense of desperation that kind of starts coming in when people get consumed by this sense of love or this need to be loved that causes them to do some wild things.
Yeah. It's and it's such a complete contrast to everything you've heard in this. Like, it's just so crazy to even, you know, the music strips away and it's just Mos Def. And to me, this part of the song starts to resemble the beginning of the Can song that Kanye's sampling and introduces this like outward element, like somebody looking in and like bringing in a new perspective. And like, you can almost wonder if like, this is a commentary on the life Kanye is living. Like, it's interesting to have such a change up here.
Yeah. It's, I mean, Kanye has some amazing bridges, but he also just has some bridges that are simply transition in nature, mm-hmm. a little more superficial. I feel like this is one of the most dynamic bridges he has in a song.
Totally.
But so it's the dangerous necessity that people seek without regard to where they are. So yeah, there's this little bit of craziness that can overtake you. The human heart is curious above all things. Ooh. and you can say that that's the human heart is itself curious in terms of wanting to connect with other people, to experience things, that it's the heart that's like driving people to make right. these decisions because it is curious. Or you could view it as saying that the human heart is curious, as in it's mysterious. It can not make sense sometimes. Yeah. There's a little bit of that duality.
I think it's cool because it brings some humanity to the song that was not yeah. there before. Like, it really does make you think that Kanye probably had good intentions, and all we're seeing here is just like the image Kanye wants to give off. The character wants to give off, the kind of life he's living and how great things are, and like these little slices of ugliness keep slipping in and like revealing that the life isn't great, but Kanye wants to keep giving off the attitude that like, no, like drunk and hot girls, like listen to this beat, like everything's great.
And even if it's not him like putting out there that see everything's wonderful, what you're saying about like he probably has good intentions, it's like he's not going out just trying to be a jerk and take advantage. It's almost like saying he's going out because he's feeling like he's missing something and he's looking for love, but just going about it in this like wrong way or problematic way.
Well, yeah, the but only way he knows how.
That, yeah.
Like he is lost. Like he's away from home for the first time. He's on his own. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Yep. It's like a kid going off to college and like going a little crazy at first because they finally don't have any like oversights.
Right.
They feel that there's this opportunity to just do anything and everything, and there's no consequences. And not realizing like there very much are consequences.
You trying to tell us something, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah. I almost flunked out of school, Travis.
You're a club king.
Yeah. Oh, was I ever not? Was I ever not? But Yeah, above all things, love. The lights are low, your eyes are bright. So it's like he repeats that love phrase again and transitions from more of the philosophical to being in a place, right? The lights are low, your eyes are bright. So suddenly there's this woman in front of Mos Def. The music plays, it's sweet delight. And you're getting this sense of an atmosphere that's perfectly catered to making you believe that you're in love with this person that you just met, mm-hmm. even though it's based on just like these superficial aspects. It's their eyes, it's the music, the low lights, and just you're feeling right. And then he goes with, your dress is tight. Oh, how I want you right now. So even though he starts the verse with this truly like conscious philosophical musings on the human heart and love, most by the end of it gets swept up in the magic of the club and descends to just, you're wearing a tight dress and I want to sleep with you.
Which like is funny because it's Mos Def. Like we were talking a little bit before the show, like it's one thing if it's Lil Wayne, which, you know, Lil Wayne is part of Barry Bonds, and it Lil Wayne like really embodies that on Barry, like that lifestyle. Like he's much more rock star. He's somebody who really gives off a persona of like confidence and somebody who chooses to be living like the way they are and owns it. And in that way, he really fits in the Barry Bonds and enhances Barry Bonds and makes it like, maybe it makes it seem more attractive to Kanye to live this kind of lifestyle. But if anything, it, more than anything, it just like sells the listener on the song, on like what Kanye wants to do with his life, like the kind of life he wants to be living. Mos Def then, who was like, you know, a conscious rapper, like somebody who would never really say things like that, like your dress is tight, oh, I want you right now, like it's not really him. It, because it's so not him, and we all know it isn't, it almost feels like he's commenting on everything. Like this serves as commentary. This is purposely contrasting the energy Kanye's trying to give off, and it's meant to be like a lesson to Kanye and show that like it's not good to fall prey to this kind of thinking. Like when you act this way, you're succumbing to something and becoming somebody that you're not.
Yeah, and that it can allure even people of Mos Def's
right,
like artistic purity and nature to the fact that even someone like him can like go down the rabbit hole. Yeah, it's such a perfect choice to have it be Mos Def rather than just another large artist that constantly sings about things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right, how you're saying with Lil Wayne, or if it was like 50 Cent, like right. coming through and maybe not even having like that opening part, but just coming through and having his style of a bridge that ends with like your dress is tight. You're just like, yeah, I expect this from 50. And the fact that you look back on College Dropout and Kanye clearly, and this was something else that we're talking about. So let me back up again. On Graduation, we've talked about how Kanye had these role models in terms of Jay-Z and Common, and that it feels like in some ways he might be trying to compete with them on this album or leap ahead of them or step out from their shadow in a sense and establish his independence, which goes with the idea of Graduation, right? Usually when you graduate high school, you feel like you're 18, you're becoming more of an adult, especially when you graduate college.
Mm.
You feel like you're very much ready for the world, you're standing on your own two feet, you want to establish yourself as yourself and not as like Jay-Z's protege, like Common's protege. And you could see Kanye potentially doing that on this album. Well, Mos has also been somebody that Kanye has looked up to in a lot of ways. And you go back to the College Dropout and you have Breathe In, Breathe Out, where he talks about how he should apologize to Mos Def and Quelly for writing such like bullshit ice rap. And that's because Mos Def and Quelly wrote Black Star, one of the most thought-provoking and like conscious albums of that era of hip-hop. I'm probably still to this day. It's one of my like top 10 favorite non-Kanye albums. It's so good. But he looks up to Talib Kweli on Get 'Em High, using his relationship with Kweli to try to like hit on these girls. And Kweli's just kind of like, Kanye, what are you doing? He also has Common on that song as well. But then on Two Words, when Kanye on College Dropout is getting away from making music for the public, that superficial, like, please like me kind of music, and is getting back to the conscious kind of stuff that he started the album with and that he ends with, it's Mos Def he has on Two Words, carrying that energy, legitimizing what Kanye's doing, the same way that having Lil Wayne on Barry Bonds, as you were saying, legitimizes Kanye in the space that Lil Wayne occupies. So the fact that he brings in Mos Def, this person that he regards so highly for the conscious stuff Mos has done, and starts in that conscious vein before falling prey, as Kanye has, to these drunken hot girls, is so amazing.
I mean, especially if the reports are true and Kanye wrote this bridge for Mos Def. Like, he literally wrote this middle section of the song that brings a completely different energy, strips away the music and contrasts everything, and then asks Mos Def to sing it. Like, that's some next level shit.
And that comes from the fact that Mos doesn't have writing credits on the song officially, lending people to think, or the interpretation, that Kanye would have written everything and had Mos step in, which maybe. I know that there was talk that Kanye wasn't giving as much writing credit back then as he does now. I think it was with 808s that he started giving credit to everyone in a way he hadn't, where he wasn't like feeling like he needed to establish himself so hard.
Right.
But yeah, that would be amazing if that was the case, where Kanye wrote all of this and was just like, all right, I need Mos here.
But even then, like, even if Kanye didn't write it, maybe Mos Def did, the fact that he brought this energy into the song means that there was some sort of understanding that the song is ridiculous and ridiculous. I almost said ridiculous, like it's Harry Potter. And needed something to like break it up and bring some awareness to the song and show that it's not earnest or anything, or it's not glorifying anything. Like, this reveals that it's not glorifying anything, that there is no love throughout the song. And I mean, yeah.
And then Your Dress Is Tight, can't help but think about Yeezus, right? And Send It Up. And at the end of Send It Up, Kanye's back in the club as he was on On-Site. There's a purposeful mirroring between On-Site and Send It Up, where on On-Site, Kanye's so earnest in his ego and sense of dominance. But by the time you get to Send It Up, he feels almost bored by it.
Yeah.
Like, he's just repeating the motions at this point, and that it's a little more hollow. But at the end, he talks about this girl who's wearing a tight dress and dancing close to him. And he follows it up with, Yeezus just rose again, as in, like, he's calling his nether region. Yeezus.
Right.
Right. Which is just, wow. It's
it's incredible. Wow.
Yeah, one of my favorite moments on the album, to reduce like the whole ego and persona and character that he had been establishing throughout the album down to just being like, yeah, it's nothing more than me thinking with my Johnson.
Johnson, that's the word you were looking for.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I just running through that scene from Austin Powers.
Tallywacker.
It's a giant wiener. Get your wiener here. Oh my God. Is that a tallywacker? Yeah.
It's great.
I don't know if people still watch Austin Powers.
They fucking better.
I hope so. If you're listening to this and you haven't watched Austin Powers, please go do so.
Just watch all three of them.
Or two of them.
Which one do you think not doesn't hold up?
The third one.
I thought that too, but I watched it semi-recently, and I had fun with it.
Okay. Okay, so all three. All three. And it does have Beyonce, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you could... Yeah, maybe it's the fact that like it just starts to feel so tired after you've seen the first two ones. But I don't know, I found the movie light enough that I just found it enjoyable.
Okay. Well, then that's an endorsement. Mm. But yeah, Yeezus just rose again. So obviously he's like thinking about sleeping with this girl. And here you have your dress is tight. Oh, how I want you right now. It's just very parallel in their constructions, which maybe that's completely coincidental. It would be very fitting for Kanye to call back on Send It Up when he's kind of at his lowest or starting to break away from the idea of the club scene, mm-hmm. to call back to a song like Drunken Hot Girls, where he essentially calls out how unfulfilling the club scene is.
Yep. I mean, again, that intercontextuality.
Yep. And not just between songs on an album, but albums in a discography.
Mm, we love them.
I want you right now. Don't tell me you sing, you about to get a deal. You can't keep on doing it. That's how the fuck you sound. You can't keep on doing it. Yeah. You only live once, do whatever you like. For the rest of my life, that drunken hot girl. Oh man, we go through too much bullshit just to mess with these drunk.
So then you get the third verse starting, which don't tell me you sing, you about to get a deal. So now you can imagine what a conversation that Kanye is having with a girl in a club. Where she's just like, oh, you're Kanye West. I sing. Like, I'm about to get a deal. Like, put me on a song. Like, rep me. Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, he just throws that away. Don't tell me that, you drunken hot girl. Which is kind of funny because Kanye was the one that was telling everybody he rapped.
Right.
And wanted to get a deal, and nobody was giving him a chance. And now here he's dismissing this girl that's saying something similar to him. But here is where I think back to the intro and the outro of the song. He's like, don't tell me you sing, you about to get a deal. Ah-dee-da-da-da, that's how the fuck you sound, you drunken hot girl. So here she's saying that she sings and she's about to get a deal, and he just mocks how she's talking, kind of reducing it to just these like syllables and dismissing it, almost like that's how you sound. There's no way you're getting a deal. There's no way you're ever like being anything. It's such a reduction of her entire being, and not just her being, but like her artistic ability. But then Kanye opens and closes this song with Mos Def saying la da 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 da. Like, he's the one that's now incorporating sounds like that into his music and song. Right. So I don't know exactly what my point is there with that, but I think it's worth pointing out that despite him critiquing this girl or criticizing this girl for sounding like that, he's the one that also sounds like this or has Mos Def sound like this in the intro and outro.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes sense. The other thing I wanted to mention is that we view this third verse as a continuation of what's been happening, right? Like, this all takes place in one night. Like, it started with him picking up the girl at the club, then the second scene is him driving the girl home, and this is all taking place at home. So you almost wonder if like she's saying like he has a studio in his place, and like she was only fine to get to his place to like, oh, I have scene, you know. This is all just playing out in the moment.
Yeah, actually, I don't know how much I ever thought about this as like the continuation of the second verse.
I think so, because you know, we get the line, like, I thought I'd only be with you one night. Like, this, like, the consequences of just one night of picking up girls is like, I'm stuck with this girl for the rest of my life. Like, he gets her pregnant, all because he just wanted to have sex.
And I guess it works too with the idea that, like, I mean, he ends that second verse with, oh, now you sober. And it's almost like, oh, now she's sober and she's with him and she's telling him she sings and she's about to get the deal. Like, has she been kind of like working him all night to try to like get his attention and then try to get like a record deal from him?
Yeah.
And he's just like pissed off about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. And then, you only live once, do whatever you like, which, I don't, was YOLO even a popular phrase at this point?
Gosh, I have no idea. I wasn't using that acronym on Instant Messenger, so.
I remember it, like, starting to become popular when I was still in college.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. But it says in 2012, the acronym YOLO became a staple of music and youth culture.
Oh, interesting.
So maybe it wasn't until we were done with college that it started picking up steam. But I still feel like I was hearing people in like 2008, 2009 being like, YOLO.
Hmm.
And then Drake made his song.
Kind of ahead of his time. Sometimes years out.
But yeah, this idea, you only live once, do whatever you like, which you can kind of tell yourself, but at the same time, like, no.
I mean, that's definitely the mindset Kanye has of this part of the album.
Yeah, like, he thinks that's a good idea here, but the very next line kind of complicates that, right? And maybe that's something he's, like, saying to the girl. Like,
right,
you know, you only live once, do it. Like, even though you're not a good singer, like, you only live once, go ahead and try and be a good singer kind of thing. But it almost feels like this is just a transition line that he's saying to himself and like summing up his decision making and like why he's going through all this bullshit to mess with these drunken hot girls, because you only live once, so you might as well do whatever you like.
Yep. I would think so. Like, almost himself willing, like, because so many stupid things keep happening to the point where, like, why would anyone continue with this girl or like keep doing this? But like, just keep going, like, do what you want, man. It's only one night, but then of course you get the consequences of what you thought was only gonna be a one night thing.
Yep. Which, you know, we talked about this in the past, the fact that Kanye says, I thought I'd be with you for only one night. Now I'm with this girl for the rest of my life, that drunken hot girl. And how out of character it was for Kanye to jump into the future like this. I guess he does it on Celebration a little bit, talking, but he says, like, you know, my future son, and starts thinking about the future. But he says this almost as if it's like certain and happened, right? I thought I'd only be with you for one night, now I'm with this girl for the rest of my life because she's pregnant, right? Right. That's the implication, going back to Gold Digger.
Yeah.
And even looking ahead to Yeezus and what it talk about on Blood on the Leaves, and these girls try and get with you and then have a kid by you, and now you're kind of stuck in something that you didn't expect to get stuck in.
Yeah.
So he brings that up here, and we're always kind of like, funny that he like jumped ahead so much, but it's actually feels a little better that he brings Mos Def in. I think just to us and how much like nuance we give to this stuff, that he brings Mos Def in and they say it together, because it's almost less than Kanye saying, this is what happened to me in this story, and more so coming back to that, like, this is what happens to rappers.
Totally.
This is what happens to celebrities. It's a collective thing, not something that's necessarily going on with just like me right now in the song.
Yeah, and when you read it that way, these lines become less like literal, like, oh, kind of got a girl pregnant and he stuck with her, and it just becomes like symbolic. Like, oh, you only thought you were going to be with this girl for one night. Like, this is just a phase. Like, you're living out, you know, your youth, your time as a celebrity, and you're going to get with these girls. But then it just becomes the norm, and it becomes part of the way you live, and you completely lose who you were before. And like, this is all you care about. It's so super sad.
Yep. And it's like, you went through so much bullshit to reach the point that you're at, and now you're being like chained down.
Yeah.
By some like decision that you made that was just for superficial reasons.
Totally.
Whether that is like being in a relationship that you don't want to be in versus talking about what we were talking about in the grander sense with like where you're at in terms of like fame and pop culture and the niche you occupy and the expectations people have of you and what you can feel like you're stuck doing now rather than like hoping that you want to be doing.
Man. We go through too much bullshit just to mess with these drunken hot girls.
A little sippy sippy.
We go through too much bullshit just to mess with these drunken hot girls.
You guys want a brewski?
We go much shit to mess.
And then we get the hook one last time, and then that la-di-da-di-da outro, which still makes Mos Def sound like one of the drunken hot girls.
And Mos Def comes in the scene of Connie here in the hook.
Oh, yeah, 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 which is nice. And we get the a little sippy sippy. Did she say she won a brewski? Which,
yeah.
Such Kanye like humor coming into an otherwise like very serious song.
Is that, I think that's interesting though. Like the song ends very dire. Like he's stuck with this girl for the rest of his life. Like nothing positive has been described at all. And at the end, he's like joking around. Like it all, it just reveals that like he hasn't learned anything and he's just going to keep living this way and continue to have the ego that he has.
Which does continue into Flashing Lights, Everything I Am, and The Glory.
Oh, hot mama.
You know what would be my stretch here?
Mm.
Is the fact that Kanye tells this drunken hot girl that she sounds a-di-da-di-da, right? And then it's Mos who's saying la-da-da-da-da-da-da in the intro and outro. Does that make him a hot drunken ghost?
I absolutely love where you're going, Chris, and I love it. And I will say there's the one other thing, and I'll add to your stretch theory, that at the bridge where Mos Def is singing, this choir comes in, and that the choir has a very ghostly sound. Like I feel like a lot of the times when I'm describing the production of this album or the instrumentation and how it sounds ghost-like, it's more of just like the way I'm describing it, the way it seems. This part really does sound like a bunch of ghosts in the background. So maybe Mos Def is a drunken ghost for all I know.
I mean, I guess that does tie into like Sing Swan Song in the fact that you have this girl getting with this guy who's described as a drunken hot ghost, and here you have what would essentially be Kanye getting with a drunken hot girl, and he himself is somebody that's just like a drunken mess as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just essentially the coming together of two drunken hot people.
Exactly.
Hmm. Hmm. That's my big stretch for this episode. That could be a new segment.
Some people might think that's the smartest thing we've said so far.
Just like, finally, it took an hour, but we got there.
More than an hour.
Oh, God. Well, then, anything else for this song?
No, I just got to say I'm very proud of us for spending probably close to 3 hours talking about Barry Bonds and Drunken Hot Girls.
It is really nice, right?
I mean, I say that's a win.
It's what we set out to do, and damn it, we did it.
I don't think people thought we could do it, but proof is in the pudding. Like, we will assign meaning to anything.
Anything, except we won't go as far to say that it is the Cold War.
Although I could be convinced.
You know, I reread what Reader said 313 more times, and I may get there.
Yeah. We're going to bring that guy on the show, by the way. We're going to do another, we're going to do a follow-up episode of Drunken Hot Girls and really get the lowdown on his theory.
Be like, it's been 3 years since that theory. What more would you add to it?
Do you think it'll also apply to the impending Cold War we will soon have with China?
Yes. And does it connect back to the HBO show Chernobyl?
And the HBO show... What's that show you wrote about? Sharper Objects?
Sharp Objects.
Sharp Objects. Does it connect to that too?
I think so.
I think it might.
It has to.
Well, I guess we're going to have to wait to find out. But while we're waiting and while everyone's on the edge of their seats, just remember that we really, really please need you to stay wavy.
Yeah. Stay wavy and then stop and think, what do I do next? And the answer is, keep it loopy.
Absolutely.
And they ask me, they ask me, they ask me, I tell them. Raise your glasses, your glasses, your glasses to the sky. This is the last call.